It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm standing at the top of a beautiful garden in Bethel Park. It is part of the Italian Garden Project, which is in its fifth year, a Pittsburgh-based project with the intent of preserving, sharing, and celebrating the Italian immigrant experience. And the people who own this garden as part of their property are Nicola and Felice Mercurio. They are first-generation Americans who bought this home roughly about 34, 35 years ago. And with me now is Felice Mercurio. It is nice to meet you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're glad you're here. I am pleased to meet you, all of you, and share a little bit of what we know.
Well, thank you. This is something that a lot of Americans used to do as immigrants came to the country, growing their own gardens, but it's kind of a lost art, which you have resurrected. Yes. How big is this area that you've created this garden in, would you say?
I would say my whole lot, it's 1 acre. So in the back, I would say it's... The garden, it's almost a quarter of an acre, I would say.
And it covers an entire hillside here. We're standing on top of a hill looking down at the garden. And would you take us inside and tell us all of what you have here?
Yes, I'll be glad to. Right. It's an honor.
Let's let you lead the way. Go ahead.
With the help of Pittsburgh's Italian Garden Project, the Mercurios have a whole network of like-minded gardeners who hold events for those who want to understand Italian gardening traditions.
My name is Mary Maniti, and I'm the founder of the Italian Garden Project. I grew up with a grandfather who was an Italian immigrant from southern Italy. I always had great respect and admiration for the kind of wisdom he had. He always would have a large garden at our house. He lived a few miles away, but every day he would come after his retirement and garden at our house. And he could grow just about anything, and he could feed our family and our extended family, and did so just so naturally and so humbly. It was just second nature to him. And he had such a love of being out in that garden, and that love of gardening really rubbed off on me.
As we sat in the sunroom of the Mercurio home, Mary talked about moving to Sewickley many years after her grandfather had died. All over Pittsburgh, she started to find Italian Americans who, as she says, did things just as her grandfather did.
They were post-World War II immigrants, and they brought with them the same traditions that my grandfather brought with him, a wisdom about the earth, a knowledge of growing things. They lived very lightly on the earth and used resources very wisely. And when I would spend time with them, I just wanted to share with other people what they knew, because they really have something that we need to learn from. They have a wisdom and knowledge that we really would benefit from learning.
Okay, so we're walking along a pathway that's surrounded by plants, some that are taller than me, and I'm 6 feet tall. These are small rows of something that's growing here. What do you have here?
Okay, this is a little bit, it's called the sweet chard. The next is sweet basil, what we call in Italian basilico. It's good to use them on your sauce, on your roast, anything you want to make.
You know, well, you could just go to a store and buy this, buy basil, yeah. Right? So why grow it?
Because it's beautiful. You get it anytime you need it. You just walk outside, you pick it fresh, you use it fresh, and it's nothing better than the fresh from your own garden.
As Felice and her husband Nicola guide us through their garden, we find an organized and packed-in assortment of edible plants: cucumbers, zucchini, lettuce, broccoli, broccoli rabe, various green beans, and of course, tomatoes. Hundreds of plants fill their quarter acre with just enough room for one-person pathways.
Look at this. Look at all these tomatoes. Rows and rows of tomato plants.
Yes, sir. We're trying to take all of the room that we have, really. We squeeze everything together, but not for space, like you were saying, because you need to have space to walk through and take care of it. You got to nourish them and baby them like a little child.
Framing all of these lush green plants, you'll find trees filled with ripening fruit. Earlier this summer, the Italian Garden Project held a fig festival to celebrate the heritage of fig growing in the United States. Mary Maniti hosted the event.
I don't think there's another fruit tree in the world that evokes such nostalgia, such passion, and such reverence to a lot of nationalities, not just the Italians, but I found Greeks and folks of Middle Eastern descent. There's just something about the fig, and so much of it has to do with the idea that immigrants, both the early immigrants and now the post-World War II immigrants, brought the starts of these trees with them, that they knew so much about growing things, that they knew that they could grow this Mediterranean fruit in places like Western Pennsylvania and Connecticut, and even as far north as Canada. So it really represents and is so symbolic, especially for the children and the grandchildren of the immigrants, of that knowledge that they remember and that they know that their grandparents had.
And Nicola, what were you just saying, Nicola, about the figs?
I'll show you.
You show me? Okay. All right, I'm going to follow you. We're walking through a thick array of plants, and you're showing me the perfect fig.
Hey, look.
What is that?
This is ready to eat them. Look how beautiful
it is. Oh, that big fig there. Yeah, that is big.
See that?
Yes.
That's a beauty.
So when do these figs, by what time will they be all be blooming? What time will they be ripe, I mean?
First of the, September.
Oh, good, good. Boy, you got a lot of them back here.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you do with all this? I mean, do you eat all this yourselves, or do you give it to friends or sell it, or what do you do?
Share it. Share them with the friends, family, whoever come along.
Really, these fig trees represent our heirlooms. I always say these are the living heirlooms that were passed down by our ancestors. A lot of our ancestors came from poverty. You know, things were hard in Italy, and they came here to make a better life for themselves. And they weren't able to give us often things of great material value, but they gave us their fig trees. And to be able to take a cutting from the fig tree that your grandfather grew maybe for 50 or 60 years at his house, that's something very, very special. They symbolically represent the immigrant experience, the hard work, the knowledge of the earth, and they really are a treasure for the people that understand the importance of the fig tree.
Our food and drink contributor, Halby Klein, is friends with Mary and has been writing about the Italian Garden Project for other publications. He's profiling Mary for Pittsburgh Magazine, and as our food and drink contributor, we wanted to see if you have some suggestions on food and drink pairings for Italian meals. First of all, Hal, good to see you again. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Nice to see you again, too.
So you've been kind of tagging along as we've toured the Italian Garden here. And so after hearing about all of the different Italian foods that we've been talking about, mix in a little pasta, maybe a little beef or veal, and then what kind of drinks do you recommend that would go with that?
Well, so I think there's a couple things. I think the first thing is, and the most important thing is, keep it simple. I think this is the most Italian thing in the world, right? Because you're spending this time growing, harvesting all this really beautiful stuff. So you don't want to muddle it up, right? So even something just as simple as a beautiful tomato, tiny bit of garlic, a little bit of basil, maybe a little bit of mint in there.
Why mint?
It's in the same family as basil. They're both these really soft, you know, beautiful herbs, and it just adds a little bit of depth of flavor. So you want to build some layers, but you don't want to muddle things up and really complicate it. Use really nice olive oil. This is the time that you want to get out. You want to really break out the good stuff to complement it, just like a touch of vinegar, and that's it. You know, so really simple. Eggplant. I was at a friend's house last night, and we just sliced up some eggplant, like shallow fried it, little salt, a little bit of lemon on it, done. Why mess around, you know?
Sounds good to me, the KISS formula. Keep it simple, stupid.
Exactly. And then with pairings, it's the same thing. You know, keep it really easy. So I'm not a total wine expert, but I was actually just speaking with Alan, who runs the wine program and the beverage program at Altius. And his motto is, if it grows together, it goes together. And I think that's a really good way to think about it, right? So what you want to do is maybe just go online, do a little research, and find out, you know, what region is this Italian wine coming from, and is it going to really pair well with it? And then, you know, the basic rules, you know, you don't want like a heavy red wine with beans, for example. You want to keep something maybe on a little bit on the lighter side with that, maybe a light red with some beans. Same with tomatoes. So that's about it. And then I love a crisp Italian beer. Peroni in the summertime is my favorite beer to drink in the summer, and it pairs well with so many things. So really crisp, light beers. Or, you know, at this time of the year when it's hot out, you might actually just want to make a non-alcoholic spritzer. So maybe you've got some shrub from the, you know, we've talked about shrubs before.
Yes, we have.
Right. So I still have some beet shrub left over from the end of last winter, and just a little beet shrub and a little seltzer, and again, a little bit of mint in there. And that's it. Done. You know, easy as can be.
You just returned from Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans, Louisiana. We'd like to have you talk about some of the cocktail trends that you're seeing this year.
Right. So I think the two biggest trends, the two biggest takeaways I got from Tales, or the first one is service. And a lot of the bartenders I talked about there are saying, okay, so now all these cocktail bars are building these great cocktail programs, right? So what's the next step? And the next step is to really return it to the customer and to make sure that it's about the customer. And I think that's something that a lot of programs are working on. I spoke a bit with Maggie Meskey, who runs the program at Butcher in the Rye, and Mikey Mills, who also, you know, helps run the program there. And they were talking about how they're really proud that they're training all these apprentices in their bar program now to be able to get them to step up and learn the ropes. And it's not just about, you know, having the right vest or the right mustache. Mustaches are gone now. There's still mustaches, but there are less of them. It's really about how are you relating to the customer and how are you making sure that it's an experience that's about the guest that's coming in. I also went, oddly enough, to a great presentation on Italian futurism and cocktails. Italian futurism is something that happened in between World War I and World War II in Italy. Since we're here with these wonderful Italians, we can talk about that a little bit, that it was about an entire sensory experience and shocking you a little bit. And so there'd be different kinds of music played for different sorts of cocktails and different flavors and textures and maybe things that were unexpected. So maybe the garnish is a little piece of cheese that's inside the cocktail. So kind of breaking the mold and breaking the trend a little bit. And what I really loved about this, and I think this applies to everything, is they talked about having a different cocktail for a different result.
How do you mean?
So say you've had a long and stressful day, right? You might want a cocktail that has something like yellow chartreuse, which is very relaxing. It's got chamomile and saffron and honey in it. That's really mellow. Or if you want to go out and have a wild night, maybe you want something with like a rye that's a little more jarring. And so the cocktail you're drinking and what's in the cocktail are going to affect your mood.
Interesting. And that's something I think probably not a lot of people think about.
Yeah. So the idea behind all of this is, you know, you're not just going out to, you know, for a night of drinking necessarily. Like drunkenness isn't per se the end result. It's, you know, to think about, okay, so tonight I'm going out to have a conversation with friends. So maybe we want to get a bottle of wine that we're all going to share and have the same experience. Or, you know, today I'm feeling a little blue and I want to be cheered up. So, you know, I'm going to have a drink that's fizzy because fizzy drinks cheer you up. So maybe like a Ramos Gin Fizz or something like that that's got, you know, a little bit more delightful quality to it.
The psychology of the drink from Hal B. Klein. So what are some of the local places where people can try these trends?
We had a really great representation of Pittsburgh bartenders down there. So like I said, we had Butcher in the Rye, Meat and Potatoes, very well represented down there. Jason Endress, who works at Butter Joint, was part of the Cocktail Apprentice program down there. Nicole, who runs the program at, who's the general manager at Grit and Grace, was down there. Alyssa from Dish was down there. Lots of great bartenders were represented down there. Chris Matroza, who's over at 1947 Tavern now. So a lot, you know, a lot of really wonderful, great Pittsburgh bar programs. Carrie Clayton, who's at Bar Marco, was taking a lot of seminars. And what's great about it is, you know, you're down there and you're having a party, you're having a really fun time, but people will also just kind of peel off and be like, oh, you know, I've got this seminar on tasting different tequilas from Highland, Mexico and Lowland, Mexico. And so you can get together and talk about it afterwards and share all these experiences. So it was really nice, and it was great talking to people. We have a lot of friends from Washington, D.C. and from Philly. And they, a lot of them remarked, you know, you guys seem to be traveling in this pack all the time. And it's really impressive, you know, knowing, you know, all these Pittsburgh people are all together and you're really making an impact now. So it's nice. I think the future for Pittsburgh is bright. And I think, you know, every year, as bartenders go down and do this, they're always taking things away and learning and just making it a really great city to eat and drink in.
Very good. Hal B. Klein is our food and drink contributor. Hal, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Read Hal B. Klein's profile of Mary Minniti and the Italian Garden Project in the September issue of Pittsburgh Magazine. You can also find photos from the Mercurio's Italian Garden in Bethel Park on our website, WESA.FM. Coming up, whether they brown bag it or purchase the cafeteria offering, lunch can be one of the most important parts of a student's day. Business contributor Rebecca Harris looks at the business of school lunches. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.